know if you've been watching the Winter Olympics, but my family tuned in for the first time last night, and we just happened to turn it on right when curling was on,
which
is the most chef's kiss perfect of a Canadian sport. Curling is... Now, you grew up in Michigan on the thumb of Michigan. Was curling at all present in high school, or like you'd drive home and there'd be some people out in a field curling or anything?
It really was not. I got it. Telling on myself and my age, the hot sport that was just being imported that everybody was just discovering for the first time at the high school level was golf. we had a golf team for the first time ever, and it was like we were on the bleeding edge of sports.
Brad, Scotland would like to have a word with you about how bleeding edge that is.
Yes, but curling, it was never a thing. It wasn't a sport in general where I was from, right. And since I'm not much of a sports fan, I didn't even know it was a thing. Probably until my first newspaper job, when I was putting together sports pages and had to accommodate that content, I discovered it. But no, I didn't know it was a thing for a long time.
So I'm going to do the anti-Wikipedia in the sense that I have done zero research about curling. Yeah. And I know nothing about how the sport works. I watched it. I was delighted watching the sport, but I had no idea what was happening. Like, I get the idea. You're pushing a stone down, and then you use this little brushy broom to, like, either slick up the surface in front of the stone to speed it up or to scuff it up to slow the stone down, right? Like, I get the idea.
Yeah.
But how the hell you score, I have no idea. What the hell the point of the whole thing is, I have no idea. But it's just sort of like, you know, when you're a kid and you're like, I'm just happy to be involved. I was just a viewer, like, happy to be watching. But honest to God, I wrote these down because these were some of the phrases that the on-air commentator said about curling. At one point he goes, boy, that's some great brushing on her own stone. And I was like, what? And then they were like, oh, look at that. Great action on her backstones. Backstones? What the hell is a backstone?
Backstones.
I have no idea what that is.
I think my uncle had backstones. He had to have a special process to remove them.
Honestly, Brad, if you drink too much coffee and not enough water, that's when you get the backstones. It's like giving birth, apparently. It's so painful. And then another one was, her stonework is okay, but she shines on the brush. These are phrases that a human is using to describe another human. Her stonework is okay, but she shines on the brush. But, like, what is this? This is the most Canadian sport ever. Like, hey, guys, it's really cold. We're bored. How about if I push this stone and then you guys take those brooms over there and we see if we can get that stone in that circle? It's like, what is this sport?
They literally just picked up what was laying around and made it into an Olympic sport. Brooms and stones.
But, like, I jokingly always say to my wife, do not bet against Canada in the Winter Olympics, because if there's two things Canadians are good at, it's dressing appropriately for a cold winter and then figuring out a sport to play during that cold winter. Like, Canadians are like, look, it's gonna be cold for another 9 months. We might as well figure out a sport. Jimmy, grab that stone. Susan, get that brush. Let's see if we can figure out something out here.
And if we really pay attention, we can turn it into an Olympic sport.
With a little bit of love and a little bit of hard work, we can turn this stupid thing into an Olympic sport. And on that note, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about loving Canada. Let's make that clear. Loving Canada and making comics.
And immaculate brushwork and making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his friend Dave Kellett, who's really doing great on his backstones. I'm the cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave! Let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And just a reminder, this show is going out live right now to all the Olympians that are playing curling across the world right now. We're so proud of you. It's going out right now to our Live Gab friends and backers over at patreon.com/comiclab. You can watch the show recorded live at the Live Gab level. And then, of course, it's recorded and archived for you. So if you happen to miss the show, which records on Tuesday mornings, you can watch the archived live show every week. And Bradley, who is our fine sponsor for this week?
Oh, well, this show is brought to you by our good friends at Wacom.com. That's Wacom.com, the makers of the professional, portable, powerful Wacom One. And we usually take this time to tell you how good that equipment is, or maybe one of our listeners has bought one or suggested one. Dave, I haven't cleared this with you for the show. I want to tell you why I love Wacom One so much.
Okay.
And Wacom in general. And it comes down to this. I was using my Wacom One at home, and I use it so much that I've got a heavy hand, and I've kind of taken that nib and worn it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, geez, I got a whole day of art in front of me, and I can tell I've really, been rough on this nib. It's time to change the nib. And so immediately I go and I see if I can buy nibs, and I wonder how long it's going to take. And then I thought, wait a minute, it's Wacom I'm dealing with here. There's got to be nibs. They had to send me nibs somewhere. All I got to do is find them. Maybe they're in the box. I look it up online. You know this, Dave. They've hidden spare nibs on your Wacom One.
I did not know that. No, where are they?
If you look behind one of the, you know how it's got two legs?
Yeah.
If you look behind the leg that's closest to the power button, right there, just hidden in plain sight, is three spare nibs. I literally looked at, and a little hole that you can easily, bink, bonk, replace your, I had the nib replaced. I didn't have to find anything. I didn't have to search for anything. And I didn't have to buy anything, which appeals to Cheapskate McGee. And I had that nib changed out and was back to drawing in 30 seconds.
I like how, you know how Disney has hidden Mickeys and all sorts of things, like the, in furniture, things around the park, toy products, like they hide Mickeys. I love the idea that Wacom's like, where else can we hide nibs? What if the power adapter had a whole hidden section of nibs? People are going to love it when they find these nibs. But you're right, though. I both on my Wacom Pro and on the now apparently with the Wacom One, the Wacom Pro had a whole. It took me, I don't know, 6-7 months before I realized that the base of the pen holder is a whole cool storage area for nibs. By the way, this is also speaking. It's not at all a shot at Wacom. Read the dang instructions, Dave Kellett. Just open the dang book once. That's all they ask of you. Their whole team worked on that instructions book. Maybe just crack it open.
I can't even tell. I couldn't read the instruction book. And I'm being serious. I was so excited to get that thing up and running. I didn't have time to read anything. It was like, plug this in now.
Yeah, exactly.
I had no time. But then it was a quick little Google search. And by the way, kudos to them for not nickel and diming you on something like a nib. They've already got you all set up. Those nibs are going to last you for a long time, longer if you don't have, heavy hands like mine, but they're going to last you for a long time, and you're going to love it, and they've already got you covered.
Amen. So we give a huge shout out and a thank you to our friends at Wacom, WACOM.com, Wacom.com, and the makers of the Wacom One. And Brad, we got a big show for everybody today because we have a self-immolation to report. Online, for those of us that came up through the webcomics heydays in the early 2000s, we are familiar with the idea of self-destruction online after years of hard work and building up a reputation. And we saw it again this week with Gumroad. And so, Brad, why don't we give everybody the rough outline of what happened? Yeah. Because it was within the course of an 8 or 10 hour window, a lot of stuff went down.
Yeah, it was amazing. We haven't seen this something like this in a long time. Gumroad, not too long ago, Gumroad was a company that was started in 2011. By the way, it's taken almost 10 years to build Gumroad up into what it is today. And today it's one of the leading digital download services, right? If you want to sell an ebook or an e-comic or anything else that you can sell digitally, Gumroad is one of the bigs. So over the weekend, this was the first weekend in February, Box Brown, Brian Box Brown, an Eisner winning cartoonist, puts out a tweet saying, hey, I'm going to be selling some original art because my former regular freelance employer has let me know that they'll be embracing NFTs. So we had to part ways. This touched off a melee between a Box and the CEO of Gumroad, in which they started posting screenshots of what looks to be private Slack message boards.
Ew. Ew, not what you want.
And trying to kind of one of them is saying, their side of the story. The other one's saying the other one. It goes back and forth. Box publicly shares one that in which the CEO says, hey, we're thinking about an NFT project. We would need about 7,777 generative characters that we could mint into NFTs. Box is saying, well, if that's the case, time to part ways. I'm just not going to get on the NFT train.
Right.
At which point, somebody on Twitter named a new artist named Zach puts out a tweet that says, it's confirmed Gumroad is pivoting to NFTs. If you want to prevent this, the time is now to let him know where you stand. And he is subtweeting the Box Brown confirmation that it was indeed Gumroad. At which point, the official Gumroad Twitter tweeted this. If and when we do anything related to crypto and NFTs, you'll hear it from us first. For now, no plans. Well, this, of course, throws gasoline onto the fire, at which point there's a lot of pushback and the posting of screenshots starts to expand.
Intensify, yeah.
Yeah. The CEO is not only tweeting from his own personal Twitter account, but also official Gumroad account is entering this as well.
Clearly, by the way, the same or similar voice, which is awkward.
We don't know for a fact that it was the same person, but Dave's right. It was a very similar voice.
Yeah.
And then there's this tweet coming from the main Gumroad account that tries to kind of put Box into a bad light, right? And the quote there is Box is saying that he's agnostic towards NFTs and worries that his audience might cancel him if he were to get involved. However, that same screenshot also makes it look very, very clear as if this whole idea about Gumroad getting involved in NFTs is more than just blue sky brainstorming. It
right.
sounds like this was something that they actually had a very clear plan. At least if you look at the screenshot, you get that idea that there was a lot of thought that seems to have been put into this.
Right, right.
Now, at this point, Brown supporters are quick to point out, well, of course, he's going to have a neutral rhetoric towards NFTs because he's talking to somebody who has paid him in the past and he'd like to retain this relationship of doing further freelance work. Okay. However, it is pointed out that if Brown signed any NDA agreements, posting those original screenshots may be a little bit of a problem.
Well, in general, even if you didn't sign NDAs, it's not the greatest thing in the world to take private communication and anyway, but keep going.
Yeah. And we don't know of the presence of any NDA or not,
right.
But that is something that if we're pointing out both sides, detractors say, hey, that original tweet was probably not the best. And the morning goes on with more screenshots and accusations, and other people are getting involved now. People are getting very angry, and every response from the official Gumroad Twitter account is more smug, angry, and abrasive than the one before.
Gets messy. It got messy real quick. It got
now,
messy.
Creators are announcing their plans to delete their accounts. Fans are pledging never to buy from Gumroad. And by the way, in terms of creators, some very heavy hitters are getting involved in this, like Rob from Cyanide and Happiness, who starts saying, hey, this is what you're doing here is weird, you know? And the tweet is, this is so weird. Keep going. And Gumroad responds, running out ideas. Rob responds, do the thing where you antagonize your freelancers from the company Twitter account again. That was funny. Gumroad responds, at which point, again, you don't expect this kind of a response.
A self-immolation,
The official Gumroad response is, that's like suggesting the same punchline to comics in a row. Any new ideas, right? So now it's, and by the way, a lot of these you can't find because they have since been deleted.
Yeah.
Somebody got a hold of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And went and delete. But the screenshots are forever. They're still floating around out there. But As this is waging and blowing up, and there's a lot of these responses.
Keep
from
in mind,
Gumroad.
This is a corporate account that's tweeting this.
Yes,
this is not
yes.
like, you know how a lot of corporations hire a sassy 24-year-old to run their yeah. social media account, and they, hey, Burger King's going to be fun for a while.
Yeah.
But Burger King doesn't go, hey, fuck you, McDonald's. Here's some internal documentation about what you did in the French market in 1992. You know, like they're allowed to be sassy, but they're not allowed to be legally abusive. And that's kind of where this started to go. It got real
yes.
problematic. In fact, I don't know if you're going to read it, Brad, but there was one tweet. Oh, okay, I'll let you keep going then.
I know where you're going. I got it right up here in All front right. of me. Jacob Van Loon tweets, your social media presence ranks among the worst I've ever seen for a company like yours. Never used Gumroad, never going to. At which point, the official Gumroad Twitter account responds.
The official Gumroad account says this.
According to your bio's email address, you already have.
Now, for those of you that are
not... Is that where you were going,
Dave,
by the way?
Yes, because if you're not familiar with what the EU and California have been instituting in terms of laws around privacy and corporate accounts and the handling of what should be private data, that was a huge no-no. That was a huge no-no. And also, just separate from a legal issue, just on a moral issue, that was just wrong. That's like a doctor being like, well, it looks like you did have an appendicitis in 1996. And you're like, wait, hold on. You can't say that publicly.
Yeah. It's even worse. It's like doctors saying, well, it looks like you never did take my advice about that herpes that you know, we talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, because it's meant to be incriminating. It's meant to be a dunk. It's meant to be a gotcha. Right.
Yeah.
But California's Consumer Privacy Act, CCPA, and Gumroad is located in San Francisco. Okay.
Oh no. So they're not just beholden to the law. They were part of the state. Oh yikes.
Yeah. The CCPA immediately people started linking how to form a formal complaint with the CCPA. And of course, if Gumroad wants to continue to do business overseas, the European Union has one of the strictest consumer protection laws on the books, the General Data Protection Regulation.
Ooh, Nelly.
Now, at this point, somebody must have got a hold of somebody because things start to slow down at this point. Things start to
get deleted.
A lot of deleting going on.
Less gasoline is immediately poured on the fire.
And immediately at some point within 24 hours, Gumroad had put up on their profile, the profile page of their official Gumroad account, they added one sentence, we don't support NFTs. That was within 24 hours. Now, 24 hours later, they added one word to that. Yet.
Man.
In other words, after finally putting this fire out, and they, we don't support NFTs, 24 hours later, somebody gets in charge of the account again and adds a word to it in parentheses, yet, which, of course, starts the whole thing all over again.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. So for those of you who had ever wondered what the when Brad and I talk about the webcomics drama of the early 2000s, that's what this felt like. Someone who had built up trust and a reputation and a sense of a good persona online. We would see it in the early 2000s because everybody was in their 20s. Mm-hmm. They would just self-destruct within a half a day. And people would be like, oh, God, step away from online argument. Because a lot of times you just need someone who loves you in your life to just say, step away, log off, breathe for
away.
A while. Not every comment has to be responded to. Because that's what it felt like for a hot minute with Gumroad, that they were responding to every comment online. It's like, stop. God, just PR 101. Stop digging. You know, that's the basic thing first. And then you can fix this. But, I mean, there's a whole... You can argue back and forth about whether a company that does digital distribution should be investigating NFTs. I mean, there's a good argument that even though I disagree with NFTs, they probably should be investigating it. But handling it like this was the worst possible way to handle it. Was like, oh, we might be doing NFTs. The world reacts. Well, fuck you, world. We're Gumroad. Fuck you. It was like, geez, Louise, stop talking. Just stop talking. What are you doing? You also get a sense, Brad, don't you, of like, you think of a company of like, oh, it's going to be 100, 200 people. But sometimes in certain blowups like this, you get a sense of like, oh, that's a company of 10 to 15 people. And the CEO has access to all the accounts. And if they go down, they're going to bring it all down with them. It can get real ugly real quick.
Well, yeah. And as this was happening, a lot of people were threatening to and making good on their threats in some cases, threatening to delete their Gumroad account, at which point, at some point, and I think this might have been the next day, Gumroad put out an update that somehow, according to what I was reading on Twitter, made it harder to delete your account.
Can I jump in, actually?
Yeah.
Because my assistant Beth was like, hey, do you want me to delete your Gumroad account? I was like, yeah, sure. I'll check how much we've made, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
And because I use it mainly, Brad, to distribute digital Kickstarter goods.
Yeah.
It's the honest to God truth. Between you, me, and the wall, I'm like, okay, because Gumroad allows that, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
So I use it mainly to distribute Kickstarter digital goods. But I was like, just out of curiosity, how much we have sold? I think in the 10 years or so of being on Gumroad, $400, right, of Sheldon and Drive goods.
Yeah.
So I was like, I go to Beth. Yeah, go ahead, delete it. That's fine. And I go back to cartooning. Yeah. And she messages me over the next 5-10 minutes. I've tried like 3 different ways to cancel this account. You can't cancel the account, which also is problematic. That's like, you know, they're doing the, hey, we're having technical difficulties.
Yeah.
You can call a pretty clear BS on that. That's, yep. I mean, it's really clear what's happening. They're hoping people forget or, you know, the temperatures cool down and don't cancel. But in the meantime, you cannot cancel your account, which I think is also a problem in the California Production Privacy Act, that you can't take your data down. You can't remove your account. I believe that I'm not 100% sure. Don't count me on that one. But I believe that's also a problem with California.
Yeah. And I have checked because, of course, I wrote about this for webcomics.com. So I was trying to make sure I was getting things as accurate as I could.
Sure.
I have checked since then. That issue has been resolved. You can go in and
not
cancel
as far.
Your
and this is as recent as yesterday. I wasn't able to. Beth wasn't able to delete our account.
Interesting. I was able to find it, but that's neither here nor there. What was important is that for a little while it definitely was being tweeted by a lot of people that corroborated that it was gone for a while and maybe still gone at this point in some cases. Of course, this is Comic Lab, so we are going to switch over to actionable information.
What can you take from this? Yes.
Right. So, and one thing is, and now we've talked about NFTs in the past, and for us, I think Dave and I are both not NFT fans. Neither one of us is going to get involved in NFTs anytime soon. I'll be honest with you. My opinion is it has all the earmarks of a scam, and I don't feel comfortable getting involved with it. Go ahead.
Well, can I jump in real quick? Because mid-level journalists have done some reporting in the last couple of days about how, because they were like, hey, why is it that Paris Hilton is going on the Tonight Show and they're talking about NFTs? Why?
Yeah.
Why would these two stars? And by the way, it was so Stepford Wives because they're like, yeah, I love my monkey. Oh, I love my or apes, whatever the hell they're called. And they're like, oh, I bought it because it kind of looks like me. Doesn't look like Paris Hilton at all.
Yeah.
And apparently what happened, Brad, is CAA, which is either the largest or the second largest agency in Hollywood, has invested a huge amount in OpenSeas, which is the big NFT platform. Yeah. And so both they and Ashton Kutcher and some other people. So it's clearly, here's what's happening. It's 100 millionaires hiring 10 millionaires to pitch NFTs to non-millionaires in the hopes of huckstering them into getting them. And so it just feels even more skeevy now that you know that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So, our opinion on NFTs is our own. We can't tell you how to think. You should definitely do your own thinking. For me, it's a non-starter for me.
Yeah. If you were similarly dumb enough to go for the land grabs in Second Life a decade ago, you're going to love NFTs. That's what I'm going to say to you.
Yeah.
Remember when McDonald's was buying up quote unquote land in Second Life and stuff? I was like, what was happening?
Yeah.
Where it's all happening again, guys. The tulip rush of whatever it was, 1470 can happen again.
Yeah.
When was the tulip bust? Was it in the 1700s? I always forget when
that was. I think it was 1700s.
I said 1400s. It definitely wasn't in the 1400s. anyway, so yeah, Brad and I do not have a strong opinion of NFTs and would highly recommend that you don't, but go with God if you want to do it. I think it's a terrible idea, but go for it.
That is your own decision.
Yeah.
And there's two things. Number one, the NFT thing, which is important to an awful lot of people. And I think we all saw that happen this weekend. Mm-hmm. And also the leadership of Gumroad. I'll be honest with you. I started Saturday morning being on Gumroad's side. Like, because I've said on this show before, considering NFTs, I understand. I don't agree with it, but if you're a tech company and you're considering it, I don't have a problem with that. I'd be wary of you if you pulled the trigger on it, but considering it is not a thing that I hold against you. So I started out being on Gumroad's side. Being completely honest, every tweet I read from Gumroad turned me further and further into a 180 degree spin.
Right.
At the end of it, I'm like, oh my God, this is a train wreck. And now I'm uncomfortable having business dealings with them. And again, that's my opinion. And I'm not saying it should be your opinion and the way you do it, but it spun me 180 degrees. Because we are into actionable information, immediately people are saying, well, if I don't do Gumroad, where do I go? Who can I do business with? Here's three places that you can look into if you are considering either leaving Gumroad entirely or augmenting Gumroad. The first one is Itch.io, ITCH.io. It's a digital download site popular with indie game developers. It allows not safe for work content, which is important for people like myself, and has published a strong NFT stance. In fact, a very, very strongly worded anti-NFT stance, if that's important to you. Number two, Drive-Thru Comics, which has been around for a long time. They wanted me to be on their system. Back when I was doing comic conventions, they'd come up every a year and say, hey, have you thought about it? And I'd be like, yeah, don't want anything to do with it. And finally, but we always had a very nice chat. The guy, his name is Matt, super nice guy, just kept coming up until finally I stopped saying no. And I started saying, you know what? I think this is something I want to try. The good news is they've been around for a long time. The bad news is their interface looks like they've been around for a long time. But I can tell you, I've dealt with them personally. I think they're great people. Nonetheless, and I've endorsed them previously on webcomics.com. They allow not safe for work content as well. And they have on Twitter just recently published an anti-NFT stance, if that's something that's important to you. And number three, Ko-Fi or Coffee, K-O-F-I. It was an early Patreon competitor. They got rid of not safe for work creators immediately. As soon as they started getting successful, they ditched NSFW, but they have published a strong NFT stance, a strong anti-NFT stance as well. So those are three alternatives. I'm sure there are more of those, the ones that I am directly familiar about, if you're considering this as well.
And along with that, a great takeaway, and thank you, Brad, for that. I want to add two other things about what can you internalize from how Gumroad committed self-immolation. Number one is, if you find that your blood pressure or your reaction is getting high, either from a reader that's critiquing you or a company that's making you mad online or something that's happening, that's the moment to step away from being online and talk to the real life people in your life. Some of the stuff that you want to vent doesn't need to be vented publicly. In fact, it's better if you don't. Remember that ultimately, you as a cartoonist are trying to entertain. You're trying to make other people's life better. The people in your life are there to support you, to help you, to nurture you, to get you through the tough moments. Your audience is not the best way to do that. That's not from a human level and from a business level. It's not the best way to do that. So log off, breathe, and talk to the real life people that love you in your life. Yeah. And don't vent your spleen online, because you can ruin a career in a couple of hours after years of work. We've seen that time and again, and this is another example of it. So vent your spleen to your friends, to your family, to your loved ones, rather than doing it online. The second one is, I want you to mentally prepare yourself for the fact that every company that does digital-based business, whether it be PayPal, eBay, Patreon, Kickstarter, Gumroad, all these other ones, they're all at some point going to explore blockchain, crypto and NFTs. They're all going to do it because it's like the perfect storm of the Venn diagram of they do business online, they sell digital goods, they have to transit money, they have to pay regulatory fees. So why not explore blockchain, crypto, NFTs? They're all going to do it. So at some point, you have to make peace with what level of comfort are you okay with either doing business with them or not doing business with them if they explore that option. I think what's going to happen is 10 years from now, they will all have incorporated blockchain into their business at some point. The majority of them will have incorporated crypto into their business at some point. And hopefully by that point, NFTs will have crashed and burned like Second Life. And so it'll have come and gone as this weird speculative thing that lasted a couple of years and it'll be gone, but they tried it out. But anyway, what I'm getting at is here, don't burn your career just because all these digital companies are going to at some point try crypto, blockchain, and NFTs. Do what works for your career and navigate it as best you can, knowing that at some point they're all going to do it.
Absolutely. And as we close off on this subject, if you're just somebody who has used Gumroad to download a lot of things, and if you're considering deleting your account, which is your decision, before you do it, sign into Gumroad one last time, go over to library, which you'll find on the left-hand column. Under payouts and discover is library. Go to your library and download everything you bought, because one of the byproducts of you deleting your account is that you're not going to have access to that stuff anymore.
Right.
And if a computer crashes or if you lose files or any number of things happen, you're not going to have access to that. So if you've decided to do that, and that's a decision you've made, do yourself a favor and go over to library and download everything that you've previously purchased.
Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we've recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. So, Brad, as we like to do from time to time at the middle of the show, we do some updates. And a big update from the top of the show. Turns out, Brad, curling actually invented in Scotland, not in Canada. So bit of a turn here from a mere 30 minutes ago. So confident making fun of Canada. And it was actually the Scottish. The Scottish also very good at the magic combination of I'm bored and I have whiskey. Yes. What can I invent? I can invent the steam engine. Yes. I can invent curling. All right. So that's update number one. Update number two, Brad, is a personal note. Surprising absolutely no one except for my bruised ego, my entire project to turn my Harry Potter closet under my stair into a podcast studio crashed and burned in the worst possible way, Bradley. It did not work at all. So as you notice, Brad, I'm back in my old podcast studio in the closet here in my studio. It did not work. So here's some fun facts, guys. Yeah. Apparently, this closet has a very high ceiling. It's like 10 feet. So even though I'm in here for a while, the heat and oxygen levels tend to be okay for what I need, right? A stair both doesn't have enough oxygen, and the airflow is terrible, and I was hotting up the place. And also, Brad, because of all the foam and moving blankets that I had moved in there, I had a bunch of plastic free radicals in that air quality. So my asthma was like, what are you doing in here, you jerk? Get us out of here. So the whole thing, all the project, all the planning, the cutting, the sawing, the installing electrical, none of it worked. And so I had to just take a big loss on it and say, well, that didn't work at all.
Oh, no. I was looking forward to the summer when the kids were home that we could hear them going up and down the stairs through the podcast. Now I'll never get to enjoy that. So let's see. I see we've got another update here. Bruce Willis got his own category for the 2021 Razzies.
Oh, yes. So, okay, remember how a couple weeks ago I was telling you how if you look at Apple trailers, you know, or any trailers for the coming year, Bruce Willis is in like a ridiculously stupid number of movies. And I said to my wife, why is this happening? Why is Bruce Willis in 9 movies?
Yeah.
So the Razzies, which are the sort of anti-Oscars for bad movies, they actually made an entire category this year, Brad, just for Bruce Willis shit movies. So there's an entire category of worst Bruce Willis movies for 2021 from the Razzies. So definitely go check that out. That was one of my favorite updates for the week. And then a final update for the week, and this actually is actionable, is much like the people would sing Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Uh-huh.
It's the first glimmers of hope, Brad. Facebook had its first quarter where the network effect actually went down. They had a daily user count that was lower than the previous. And so chef's kiss perfect. I want this so bad for us as a society. So just start to plan accordingly, because network effects can go up and network effects can go down. And once people start leaving a thing, generationally, it can have big changes as TikTok goes up and Facebook goes down.
Yeah, and they lost, what, $1 billion?
Yes. Now, granted, They can lose 1 million people a week and still be doing great in terms of numbers for the next couple of decades here. They have so many a huge user base, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like it's going to be an overnight thing where, well, goodbye, Facebook. You were terrible for democracies and now you're gone.
Yeah.
But it is you should start to plan accordingly, because I think it is the first glimmer of the beginning of the end.
Wow. I will tell you, just as long as we're in update mode, I've been cutting back on my social media. I've talked to you about, I put the phone on the other side of the bedroom when I go to sleep. And I even took another step. I actually did this. I always kind of rolled my eyes that it was there, went into my settings on my iPhone. And for all my social media, I've given myself a total of 2 hours of screen time. After that, it locks them out. And of course, the idea is to go to an hour and a half, an hour and 15 minutes, an hour, and to throttle that back. I'm still doing.
Good for you.
Yeah, I'm still doing social media in the morning, planning everything out and doing those kinds of things. But this whole idea of checking in every hour to see if somebody said something to me that I can respond to in hopes of boosting my engagement, I've given that up entirely gave that up, because it's just not worth it. and I am kind of encouraging you to do the same. You can get about the same effect as you're getting now, because the little bit of engagement that you're going to squeak out to me just isn't worth it. So that'll put a cap on our update section for today. And we can go into this question from one of our Patreon backers. And this is a great, I love talking about nuts and bolts stuff like this. Another art-based question. This one is about drawing boards. So our Patreon backer, Oxfordinary, says, what are your thoughts on drawing boards? I have one that I can put on my desk and adjust. When I use it, I feel less pressure on my neck and back, and I'm not leaning over my work like I usually am with working on my flat desk. However, I'm not entirely comfortable using it. I'm so used to working on a flat surface, and I am constantly holding up the art piece with one hand to keep it from sliding down on my drawing desk. Is working with a drawing board worth it? So here's the question, Dave. How do we walk this person through their drawing board woes?
So, first of all, to answer that, the last question first, a drawing board is absolutely worth it. Hundreds of years of artists can tell you that angle, even a small one, can make a big difference for your wrist posture, your neck posture, and your lumbar region of your back.
Yes.
And so sometimes just going from a flat surface to 5 degrees, 10 degrees, doesn't need to be a lot, can make a huge difference in your day if you're sitting there for hours on end. So yes, that is absolutely worth it. But then I would say if it's new to you, it's really just an experimentation process. It's a matter of figuring out how much or how little tape to put on the corners of the paper to hold it into place. It's a matter of figuring out what angles your specific paper has in terms of grit, mm-hmm. so that it holds just enough so it doesn't slide down.
Yeah.
That, you know, because I have a tendency to want to draw really high. I really like a high angle, as Brad will tell you on my Cintiq. But when I draw traditionally, I have to go much lower because, frankly, like you found, it's just annoying to have the paper go, whoop, see you later, I'm going places. And, you know, I like to give my papers a little turn as I'm drawing, you know, turn this way, turn that way, turn the physical paper. And when it's taped down, I don't enjoy that as much because then my wrist has to find angles that can make that specific curve or this or that. So for me, it's a matter of finding the angle of the desk that works best for you.
Yeah. And I do like that idea of using tape on your instead of using your hand. I do like that. And I've worked the way this person's talking about with a tabletop drawing desk on top of a desk. And remember, you don't have to necessarily pick that piece of paper up and untape it and tape it back down. If you're working like this, you can move the whole drawing desk, right? You can angle. I've done that whole thing where I just pick up the drawing desk and rotate it till I get the right angle and then draw it, because this is a tabletop model, right? So use it at its best advantage, and don't untape it and tape it back down and do all that. Pick that thing up and angle it to where you want it. I'll push it across the desk. I'll pull it to me. I'll do all kinds of things. And actually, I do the same thing with my Wacom Cintiq 21, which is on an arm. I'm constantly pushing that, pulling it, angling it so that I can get the right angle.
Yes. It's so funny to hear you say it, because a Wacom can digitally spin. Yeah. I still physically like to turn my Wacom. I'm the same way. Yeah. I could do it with no effort digitally, but I like to physically turn my Wacom. Yeah. I'm the same way. Yeah, and so I will keep going with a couple more things. The portable desktop units are a little less satisfactory in that sometimes if they don't have enough weight, if they don't hold their own ground.
Yeah.
You feel like you're drawing on a wobbly picnic table sometimes. Yeah. You know what I mean? In that you don't trust the surface that you're drawing on. And that can make your hand more tentative. So you can kind of do a sandbag approach and grab the thickest book of comics that you have in your studio and put it on the leg to kind of hold it down, right? Mm-hmm. So that's option number one. Option number two is if you can configure this, this portable drawing angled table here, this drawing board, on a standing desk, to Brad's point, you can move yourself physically in ways that create totally different angles. When I went to a standing desk, what I realized is that I've put cameras on myself, I kind of dance over the course of an hour. I'm like, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And I'm kind of shifting and I'm dropping my shoulders and torquing my body because, unlike a chair, I can move. There's a little bit of salsa going on there, you know, as I'm drawing. So you may want to experiment, since it's a portable drawing desk, that you can put it on a standing desk and see how you feel about it.
Yeah, I saw the video of that, by the way, and I didn't mind a little bit to the left. I didn't mind a little bit to the right. It was the twerking that always kind of distracted me. And I thought, you know, why?
Yeah. Well, you know, everyone who's seen that video is like, thank God he's already married, because nothing good was going to come of that video.
We had to form an orderly line somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
But listen, Oxfordinary, the bottom line is we do want to encourage you to find a way to make that drawing board work, because you already said it yourself. I feel less pressure on my neck and back when I'm not leaning over my work. That's going to cause problems over a lifetime of cartooning. And you do not want that to happen. You do want, and yes, of course, you're not entirely comfortable because you've been doing it without putting too fine a point on it. You've been doing it wrong for so long. You're going to have to get used to doing it right. You're going to feel uncomfortable. Stick with it. It's worth it. But you've got back problems in your future if you don't.
And neck problems, and even wrist problems. So anyway, I'm going to jump us into our next question, Brad. And this is, Hi, Brad and Dave. Recently, Dave talked about how he would enjoy doing comics essentially forever without retiring from it, which I hope he does because he's awesome. Yeah. Aha! See, Brad, my mom does write questions to the show. I currently have a day job that I enjoy, and I make comics on the side as feasible while still having a family. Dave mentioned how cartooning is a career that's possible to keep doing as we age. It made me wonder about the feasibility of going full-time after retiring from my day job. I have a 401k and my day job makes significantly more than I know is possible for the average cartoonist, which is a bummer. This wouldn't happen anytime soon, keep in mind. I'm at least 25 years from the government allowed age to take my 401k. But what do you guys think? Do you know others who have taken to cartooning or some other creative job while collecting retirement income? Are there business or tax issues related to collecting retirement while also being self-employed? Thank you, as always, for the wonderful show. Brad, this is a really good question. We've never had this before. It's basically asking about cartooning as a second act in life. And what are your thoughts on
that,
Brad?
I'm going to answer the last question first, and that is, are there business or tax issues related to collecting retirement while also being self-employed? That's a question you want to ask a certified public accountant. You should never, ever take advice from two dumb cartoonists on business things.
Oh, Brad, this is where I'll chime in and say, you hush, Brad. I got a lot of good advice on this. Hold on. You're going to want to get
and
a pencil.
It's also potentially going to change based on what state you live in, because there might be laws. So you do not ask a podcast that question. Yep. You ask a certified public accountant that question, and they'll give you a lot better information than us. As far as the rest of that question, I think that sounds great, because and I think this is the third week in a row I get to say live your luxury.
I know this is like a new Brad phrase. I'm still a little uncomfortable hearing it from you. I don't know how to feel about this.
You can absolutely live your luxury. And I'll tell you,
I feel like you're going to sell me a timeshare every time you do it, Brad. That's the problem.
Well, stick around. I'm not done yet. Wait till I get to the end. But no, this is one of those moments, because you can take some of that pressure off and luxuriate in being a pro-am cartoonist. There's no pressure. There's nothing, you don't have to sit there and worry about social media and all these other things. You can just do it for the love of doing it, knowing that you've got that income coming in and you're not worried about putting food on the table through cartooning. You can do it with no pressure. But I do want to encourage you to do it, because the more you do it, obviously, the better you'll get at it. And the more you can take a critical look at your work over a length of time, and see where you can improve and so forth. But you can continue to work and to improve and to enjoy yourself. Then when you do get to retirement age in 25 years and you do switch over to retirement, then your skills will be built up to an extent that when you are ready to go pro, you'll have pro level chops. And you can just hit the ground running and do it. I think this is a wonderful idea. In fact, this whole idea of it doesn't need to be right now. You're not doing what I did when I was in newspapers. I got to get the hell out of this place. This place is driving me crazy. And, and made a lot of decisions and made myself miserable for an awful long time because I wasn't a official cartoonist. You've got the right idea. I think you should absolutely do this. Enjoy your cartooning. I'd still kind of suggest keeping to some kind of a schedule or some kind of setting deadlines or goals for yourself. Maybe not so much schedule as goals, because I want you to keep doing it regular. And sometimes a situation like that, it's easy to slip off your radar and a couple of years go by and you realize you haven't done anything. So I do want you to keep with the goals. But this whole idea of saying, you know what, I've got time to do this when I retire, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, another way to look at this, and it's basically just echoing what Brad said. Brad says you'll be able to live your luxury. You'll be able to cartoon without clenching.
Yeah.
You'll be relaxed. You'll be relaxed. And if you've ever heard Bill Murray talk about why, when he is at his most relaxed, he's doing his best acting, it's because you're most free to be the artist that you want to be. You don't have the anxiety. You don't have the tenseness. You don't have the clench, as I said. And so if you're retired, your money is set, that removes a whole host of background anxieties and tensions that can influence your art. And so when you're relaxed, when you don't have that tension, you're going to be the best version of a cartoonist you can be. You can, to Brad's weird timeshare phrase, live your luxury.
Yeah.
and honestly, I don't know anyone in cartooning that has lived a second act like this, but I have one buddy who was an officer in the Marine Corps and retired ungodly early. You know how they can do that? Like he was in for 20 years, and I think he retired at 47, 48, and now he's got this whole second act to do whatever he wants. And so this can absolutely be your future. And I think Brad's right on the money. I think prepare for it now. Lay the groundwork with getting better and better and working and honing your craft so that by the time you're ready to jump out into the world, you can go full on in a way that is both excited and relaxed, which is like the 1-2 punch of making great art.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, I really want to see what you create because I'm kind of excited about this whole thing. So good luck. Keep in touch with us. Let us know how that goes. And Dave, I think we've got time for one more question from a Patreon backer as we're rounding out the show here. And this is interesting. It's about numbering your posts when you're posting your comic updates. Should you use numbers or titles? I'll give you the whole question. This one coming in from Son of Wits, who says, how do you all feel about episode and page numbers in comic post titles and URLs in ongoing stories? Is there an acceptable convention? Once I saw the RSS email list output of a bunch of page titles, I realized it seemed weird not seeing a page number. So we changed all the titles and URLs to include page numbers and also episode numbers and so forth. A bit of digging shows me that other comics have different ways of doing things, from titled pages to date stamps with no titles. I wonder what the optimal approach is.
Well, this is a really good question. We've never had this before. I will be honest that I'm kind of agnostic on it, in that I really, it always goes back to, if you're making a good comic, people will find a way to read it regardless of how it's titled, you know? And sometimes I think the titling is only for the rare occasions where someone wants to find or share it, that specific comic. Having said that, though, I think if you're doing a long form story, there actually could be an argument for having some sort of numbered system, whether it includes the chapter and the page or just the overall page, that lets people know, here's where you are in the story, or here's the comic that you're looking for out of a possible 400 pages. I personally don't know that the title of a comic gains you much other than the day that it's first shared. I think once it goes back in the archive, I don't know that the title gains you much. That's my overall thought. But again, Brad, I'm pretty agnostic about it. How are you? Where do you land on this?
The way I do it for myself is I just use a page title that is based on the content of that day's update, right? And I do that for SEO, search engine optimization, which is a topic that we don't talk about a whole lot on this show, although maybe we should talk about it more often. I like knowing that there are words there that people might use that might help them discover my comic on that day. Maybe they're doing a search for, you know, a princess and a frog, and I've got, you know, the princess and the frog in a title. They come over, and they see that content that day, and maybe that's their entrance into discovering what I do. So I like that idea of being able to have search engine optimization based on the topic. Okay. As far as having chapter numbers and page numbers and stuff like that, for me, that's less important. Now, if you want to do that, I say go for it. I think that's fantastic. I would prioritize words over numbers. I would want the page title first in words, because again, I for SEO, I want that right up front, prioritized. I don't want that at the end of a sentence. I want that at the beginning of a sentence. And then the numbers come last because they're incidental. Because again, nobody is out there looking for, you know what I want to read today? I want to read chapter 13, page 5 of a comic. You know, nobody's looking for that. So that's less, it's perfectly okay to include. It's not a priority, though. Those words are the priority. That's fine if you want to do it. Again, not so important to me because I've got kind of another philosophy when it comes to publishing. And it works like this. That website is there to get you interested. That website is there to almost like a gateway drug. It's there to get you hooked. It's there to get you into it and to make it easy for you to read when you come in and discover. And if you want to continue to read and continue to follow. in terms of going into archives and finding things that happened before and charting storylines and all this other stuff, that's when I'm going to very politely kind of guide you over to books and ebooks and e-comics, all of which make it very easy for you to do that stuff. And of course, that also makes it easier for you to be involved in the business of my comic, right? That's a monetization effort. I want you to buy an ebook if you get to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, I want to know about this storyline that happened last year. That's great. And you can find it on the Evil Inc. website, but you better believe I make it infinitely easier to find it on an Evil Inc. book or an Evil Inc. e-comic or an Evil Inc. ebook. I want to kind of guide you towards that because I'm running a business and not a service. I'm running a business, and that free sample on offer that you're reading is great. But at some point, I'm going to be very, very gently, in a friendship kind of way, leading you over to the store.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I think, listen, on most levels, I probably do the same. I will say, though, much like how generals are always fighting the last war, I'm currently designing my new website for Drive, and I'm correcting for all the problems that my current site has. And I'm saying this because I'm acknowledging that I might be overcorrecting, trying to fight the last war, and therefore creating new problems in this new website, which is I had no good way to search the archives for people to know where they were, to people to get a sense of where they were in the archives, to people to share it with one another in terms of like, this is the page you want. And it's higgledy piggledy. And everyone acknowledges that, myself included, that the Drive website is terrible to try to fix. Yeah. Brad's nodding. Don't nod. I don't need that from you.
No, I'm nodding because the Evil Inc. archive has some similar issues that I fought the last war, and then there was another war that crept up when I wasn't looking. And it's always like you're putting out fires. So yes. I get that. I totally get that.
And so I'm saying this because there's no ideal way to do it, I think, because now I'm overcorrecting and I'm creating a Drive website that does list the act, the chapter, and the page number and the original date of publication as a way of giving you like every possible way of trying to find in a much better archive page that I'm also going to have where you might have last read the comic. Like, let's say you gave it up a year ago. I get a lot of emails like, oh, Dave, I got a new job in Des Moines and I stopped reading for a while and I'd love to come back in. Or, I got deployed and now that I'm back in the States, I want to get reading again. And it's like, I don't know where to tell you to start. You're like, it was roughly this point in the storyline. You're like, I don't know. So now they know the act, the chapter, the date, the page number, they're going to know the date. And I think they'll also know the title of the page. Basically, it's a lot of information, and hopefully the new archive page works better to get them. But now I've probably introduced a problem, as Brad said, in undershooting the value of the title and overshooting where you are on the page and what the original date was. Because like Brad said, SEO doesn't care about that. That's so uninteresting. So it really services existing readers. It doesn't necessarily help me with SEO, but again, I'm fighting the last war, which is all my existing readers complaining about how terrible the archives are. Yeah. And maybe now I'm shooting myself in the foot with SEO. So anyway, we're all fighting our own battles on this.
Well, along those lines, again, I can see having the act and the chapter and the page somewhere there. Again, not top, but somewhere in there. But what are the chances that person who is deployed says, oh, gosh, I was reading Drive. The last thing I remember was Nosh was in the cafeteria, right?
Right.
They're not going to say the last thing I remember was chapter 3, page 8. They're going to say, I remember this topic that was happening in the storyline. And I think it might be easier to search your archive if those kinds of things are in the page title. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Again, this is me responding to emails that I've gotten, which is, hey, I know I stopped reading at Act 2 because I physically bought that book. I haven't bought Act 3. So, A, where is Act 3? And now the new site will have immediately better ways. You've seen, I think, the version of the new drop-down navigation that I've designed, which is I took a little bit of Webtoons, a little bit of Go Comics, a little bit of our own navigation, and I tried to design a new way to do it. And I think it's going to be cool, but we'll see. Maybe I've designed a train wreck. So, I'm trying to give people like, hey, I know I stopped reading in March. Okay, well, now you have a way to know where to go. Hey, I know I stopped reading somewhere around Act Two. Okay, now you know where to go. Hey, I know I stopped reading in this storyline. And hopefully I'll also have the title that can maybe with keywords help you get to it. Anyway, all I'm saying is, for the most part, though, I'm agnostic because I still kind of believe, even with an SEO universe that we live in, that a good comic will get you where you want to go far more than these titles, these dates, this nomenclature will get you. And so I a little bit feel like sometimes what I do and what Brad does and what you're doing in this question is rearranging deck chairs when there's a whole bigger issue about like just making the good comic. And so I acknowledge that this is a valid question. We all have to think about it. But I think, honestly, whichever way you choose to go, I guess what I'm getting at is the quality of the comic will be far more determinant than the quality of the way you are naming it.
Yeah. And I will say this, just to add on to what Dave just said, no matter where you go, I hope when you go there, you're going to be listening to another episode of the Comic Lad podcast that we're going to do for the next several months going forward, because we love talking comics with you. You've been listening to this Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
And remember, do not bet against Canada in the Winter Olympics. This is all they have. Let them have this. Your hosts have been Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my friend Dave Kellett, the co-director of Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard, who's having particularly good brush on his backstones. He's of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode.
And Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that like Brad talking about his backstones, patreon.com/Brad's backstones.
Brad Geiger here with the Wide World of Sports, standing here with Seamus, the man that invented curling for Scotland.
Right. So, listen, it's been a cold winter here, and your wee-numpty bint has created a whole new sport. It involves taking a stone. All of our sports seem to involve taking a stone and doing something with it. And you push the stone in the ice, and you get the wee brush, and you brush, brush, brush.
Now let me understand this, Seamus. First, you tick the stone. How does one tick the stone? Explain to me.
Right. Well, first, Brad, you get one or two fingers of McLaren and you or McClagget or whatever the current whiskey of the day is.
Yeah.
Then you get a tickaboo on the old stone and you rat leave the hurdin with a brush and you hug a herd of freedom.
So, yes, I was with you there for a minute. Exactly what point do I harda hida huda? Explain that part of curling to me.
By the way, a totally separate note. I don't know why I just thought about this. Yeah. It is a shame that they lost their battles, because there is no more badass move than the Scottish army flipping up their kilts and slapping their asses at the English, because that is so, like, had they won, that would have been so baller. Like, we slapped our ass at them. That would have been so amazing.
And it shows a lot of confidence, because you do not want them to shoot the gun at that point.